us to take note of, and that is the timelessness of what Fred Rogers was all about. What do you think the main reason for that is? Is it because all of the messages were good? Or what is that? What do you think really makes it possible for a group of people to come together at this point and do something that is a tribute to him, but that entirely depends on what he was all about? Is there an element of timelessness in what he represents for you guys as well?
Roberta, I think it's because of the fact that Fred spent years working directly with young children and trying to understand what's important in their lives so that he could then communicate with them through television, through his words, his music, and the make-believe stories. He really understood. He could understand it from his own childhood, his own world, and he could also understand the world through the eyes of young children. And that doesn't change over the years.
It doesn't, does it? Now, certainly the need to have that doesn't change. There are not very many Fred Rogers, though, in the world. If there were, I think the world would be a different place.
No, I agree.
Because you can't be a child forever. And Ethan's mom is a good example, and Dad and her whole family. That's a good example of how important his work is, and especially in the sense that he spent all of his adult life, you know, expressing what he understood so well. It's important that what you just said be made a part of his record, and that is that he understood children. He understood children. He understood the child's mind. He understood the child's desires. He understood the confusion that children have. And so he fed to those things good qualities of resolution, how to get around, how to cross over a bridge, how to walk to the next corner. For some children who are really young and very, very childlike, that can be an intimidating thing. And most adults would not spend 2 or 3 minutes of a show saying, here's how you do it. And he just made it such a beautiful experience. I just think I have so much respect for him. And gosh, when I heard the other songs, Dennis, that he had written, you know, that are included on the album, I knew he was prolific as a songwriter, but I didn't know that there were so many really good songs. And I bet you there are more.
There are. Like the hard part of making this album was trying to narrow it down to a handful of songs.
Say that again.
Yeah, it was hard to narrow the album down to just a handful of songs, Dennis was saying. And there, a lot of people I don't think knew that Fred wrote all of those songs, hundreds and hundreds of songs. I don't know, Hedda, if there's an exact count.
We say over 200, and there were also about a dozen children's operas that he wrote. That
operas?
Many of them are,
oh, I'd love to hear one of those. Yeah,
many of them are still on the air.
Yeah.
And he wrote the melodies and the lyrics, which is also unusual and most people don't realize.
Well, we have a lot of people calling to join us. In fact, Tony Rose is about to join us. Roberta, thank you. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Hedda. Thank you again, Dennis, from the bottom of my heart for reaching out to me and working with me on this wonderful arrangement of Won't You Be My Neighbor. And thank you, Ethan, for bringing your mom and dad and your baby sister so that I could meet them. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Roberta. Hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And hang on, Dennis. We'll be with you in just a moment. You're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade. It's 25 minutes. Well, there you have it. A little bit of history. Some of our staff were telling us where they were in 2005. As we listen to that, which concerned me a little bit. Time really flies, doesn't it? The answer, in most cases, was elementary school. That from October 22nd, 2005, Roberta Flack. And what a life. She died at the age of 88 on Monday. Broadcasting live for Youth Express is next. From historic Allegheny Square,
This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUP-FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ-FM Grove City, WCUC-FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, WKYW LP Kaiser, West Virginia, mountainstreamsradio.org, Tube City Online at WMCK.FM McKeesport, and SLBRadio.org/radio. Known as Band of Rooks at the Saturday Light Brigade. And I hope you are going to stay tuned for our Youth Express Hour. We've got some remarkable teens during this half hour and next who are in leadership roles doing just some amazing things. And we're going to talk about a hackathon that has been started locally and I think is going to catch on in other communities as well. I've been to exactly one hackathon in my life, and I had a ball when I went to it. So you'll learn more about that in just a moment.
Prime Stage Theater joins you in supporting the Saturday Light Brigade. Prime Stage Theater's production of I Never Saw Another Butterfly and the Terezin Promise takes place at the New Hazlett Theater in Pittsburgh's North Side from February 28th through March 9th as part of its 28th season of Strength, Voices, and Hope. More details are available at primestage.com.
B
Be the first to learn about upcoming guests and features by subscribing to Brigadier Briefings, our email newsletter. Each newsletter includes an original puzzle, links to past programs, and details about youth and adults appearing on the next edition of the Saturday Light Brigade. Get closer to SLB by subscribing to our newsletter at slbradio.org/subscribe.
Hello to Carrie. Nice to have you listening. Carrie is in Oil City, and I appreciate the kind words. I'm thrilled that you're with us pretty much as you are every week, right? But it's still nice to have you with us. And I now would like to introduce you to two students from Shadyside Academy. They are both 17. They're both in 11th grade. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we'll talk a little bit about what they're up to.
My name is Vivan Podar. I'm a junior at Shadyside Academy, and you know, I'm really interested in, you know, community initiatives to bring computer science education to Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm Thomas Wang. I've been friends with Vivan since middle school, and we've been kind of sharing passions ever since.
And you are from Wexford and Fox Chapel, right, respectively. So let me start with you, Vivan. This passion for sharing your knowledge and kind of achieving equity in computer science, what brought you there? And I know you must share that too, Thomas. Talk a little bit about the motivation behind that and the need for that.
You know, I think starting in elementary school, I just, you know, from an early age, I've been really into these sort of into computer science. And my dad is actually one of the first people who introduced me to, you know, the field, and he's a big inspiration for me. And just one thing I noticed is that, like, this field, which is, like, so important in the modern world, it's, like, you know, in schools and stuff, we're just not getting the, you know, the education and, like, expertise in this field that we need to, like, do well in the future. And I think that's where a lot of my motivation for this comes from. But,
yeah. And do you think, I don't want to put you on the spot, but is that even true at Shadyside, that some of what could be is not happening?
Yeah, I can share a little bit about it. So we both came to Shadyside in eighth grade, and I think that's when I met Vivan, and then also on my own, I was starting to develop an interest into, you know, technology and CS. But then I think in eighth grade, first of all, we had like a computer class, and it was like, it was genuinely just like about a lot of like Scratch. I don't know if you know what that is. And also just a lot of, you know, stuff that are like rubbing the edge of computer science, but they're not really what it is. And what we're doing is kind of not really, not really real world applicable. And I would say that extends to the senior school, where oftentimes we learn stuff and we're able to, you know, do well in classes, but these classes ultimately, they, you know, they ultimately show you how to draw a triangle or like to write a program that, you know, can print something out. And that's we would say that's a bit antique, a bit outdated in today's world.
Hello world, you know. We were doing that when I was your age, and Scratch, I mean, I think young elementary school children can use Scratch. So what did you do? Well, I'm curious, and again, this is a conversation, not an interrogation, but why is there this deficit in schools? Is it because the technology moves so quickly, or is it because really every individual student is going to connect with the subject differently? Because that gap's existed for a long time, and as you pointed out, it exists at private schools, at public schools, everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think it's to any fault of the schools. You know, I think a big reason that this happens is that it's hard to get you know, computer science professionals into the teaching profession, and I think that says a lot about, you know, how like the teaching of the teaching profession is, you know, not given the importance that it should get in our modern world. I think, you know, our at Shadyside Academy, you know, I think obviously, I mean, our computer science curriculum has our program has gone back since like 20 years or so. We're probably, I'd like to say one of the first in Pittsburgh to have a computer science curriculum. But the problem with this sort of these sort of things is that we're not getting the industry expertise. And like you said, you know, the field is moving so fast. Like, how can we expect schools to keep up in, you know, offering these sort of you know, these high level sort of education in computer science? And I think you know, to get that done, we need more community, you know, support and things of that nature.
Anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I mean, just adding on to that, I think we have this conversation pretty frequently. It's just like we kind of talk about how if one is, you know, up to date with the CS world, who's, you know, actually proficient in like modern day programming, then they would probably prefer to have a as a job as a software developer or something of that kind rather than teaching out of high school. So I think that's the issue here.
You both have really good observations, and I agree. It's not the fault of the school or the district or teacher. It just sort of is. And something you made me think about just now is you're learning history. You don't necessarily need to have a historian to learn from. There are other ways of teaching history. If you're learning mathematics or chemistry or physics, you don't, I mean, it might be nice to have a chemist come in for a day to talk about what they do. But this is one subject where it really matters to have an industry professional for most, if not all, of what you're learning, which does make it hard because people aren't necessarily attracted to teaching, or it might not be their strong suit. So that's a good just a really good observation. So the two of you came up with Shady Hacks, and you've got a hackathon that's going to be April 5th, I believe, between 9 and 5, and it's free. It's open to any middle or high school student. We'll give you a website that you can register at shortly, so they have a good sense of who's going to come. And you also don't need to come for the whole time. You can spend a couple hours or the whole day. Now, people might be wondering what a hackathon is. Tell us that and also what you plan on doing that day.
Okay. So a more general overview of a hackathon, it's just kind of you spend a bunch of hours at one place and have some friends, form a team, and then you solve one problem that we will present to the group at the day of the hackathon. So that's what we called like the theme. And then you basically use any software. Like for us, we're keeping it very like open-ended. You can use any software or like hardware you would like. We provide everything from like computers to 3D printers to any sort of Arduino, any circuitry you would want to have in your project. Anything is fine for us. Do you have any?
Yeah, and I think you know, what a hackathon is really trying to get you to learn these skills through building an actual project. And I think that's where the true, you know, the true education comes in when you're building like real world applications.
Yeah, the one that I remember, like I said, I've only been the one. It was in San Francisco, and it not only taught me new skills and got me thinking of things differently, but it's almost a dinner party or a get-together. It's almost like, you know, going to a football game or something, because it causes everybody attending to interact quite naturally around the particular subject, whether it be the dinner or the game, and in this case, the project. And I remember, you know, I was fortunate enough that our hackathon was about audio recording and things that are very relevant to our work here at SLB. And everybody had different ways of approaching you know, the same problem. So it's really cool. Have you guys been to other hackathons?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton in Western PA and also online. I think one thing that really struck with me is this sort of community engagement you were talking about there. And I think that's like a big thing we're trying to capture here with our hackathon. So what we do like outreach to schools from all over Western Pennsylvania. And I think we encourage them to build teams of three on the day of the hackathon. And to make those connections and build those networks is really important, I think. Just friendships in general, you know.
Now, what's especially unique here is it's a youth hackathon and it's open across all boundaries, neighborhoods, skill levels. I know there are some other hackathons that they're not necessarily limited to adults, but they're primarily geared towards adults, right? Mm.
Yeah, I was just going to talk briefly about that. Like, for in downtown Pittsburgh, there's a lot, like, mainly, you know, it's for college students. There's some hosted at CMU, at Pitt. But I would say, like, these, not only are they, you know, the main target audience isn't really the youth. They're usually college students or, you know, possibly, like, industry people. And then also some of them have an entry fee. They don't really give, you know, these master classes, as we call it. Like, for example, one of the, I think, more helpful things that we do here is we have these master classes, and we have not only teachers but also professionals from a bunch of companies who are actually in software development. They would come to us, and then they would have these stations. They would help people individually, and throughout the day they would also give these talks. We call them master classes to help people get started.
That is amazing. What a great opportunity. Now, joinsilicon.org, is that your website?
It is, yeah.
And then slash Shady Hacks, all one word, Shady Hacks, is how you can find information about the hackathon. But given how the website is constructed, I might be misinterpreting this, but it seems like you're hoping to have joinsilicon.org/Beaver County Hacks, or whoever wants. Are you hoping that the seed you're nurturing now might grow to include other communities or other hackathons?
That's exactly what we're trying to do. We started with Shady Hacks as, you know, our own thing, because we're not trying to go from 0 to 100 in one day. But, you know, it starts with the community. And if we can get these hackathons throughout, you know, Western Pennsylvania, even like the entire country, like that would be fulfilling our goals. And I think with Silicon, we're trying to get a lot of these hackathons, these high school hackathons around, high school and middle school hackathons around, you know, the region to sort of combine into like one, not combine, but I'd say sort of collaborate in their offerings and get these, you know, these outreach efforts to more people.
And just adding on to that, I would say like after we hosted our first run, which was last year, April, I post obviously what we do on my story and everything, and then I would get people swiping up and then messaging me, and they're from like other parts of the world. I would say, like, I have people from Taiwan, I have people from California swiping up. They say, oh, like, I would love to have this in my school, you know. At that time we weren't able to actually, like, because we were earlier in our stage, but now I think we're ready to expand into helping these other communities as well.
It's amazing. By the way, if you're just tuning in, Vivan Padar is here, and Thomas Wang, the two of them, or two of the leaders of joinsilicon.org/Shady Hacks, will take you to information about the hackathon on April 5th between 9 and 5 o'clock. It's at Shady Side Academy, but please don't think that it's only for Shady Side Academy students. It's for any middle school or high school student that has an interest in this sort of thing. You might come and discover it's not for you. And, you know, after staying for an hour, you might come and stay forever and want to get even more involved. What you're doing is so significant in terms of getting people to engage with one another I mean the skills building and career exploration is huge, but even if those didn't stick, the engagement will stick, right?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, just a lot of fun for our participants, and even if you're not trying to, you know, win or maybe, you know, build your skills in computer science, you can just come and make friends and, you know, build those connections.
I can put a bit of stress on, so first, we are all inclusive, so you don't have to pay for lunch, there's no entry fee, there's nothing, and then, you know, all of our master classes are obviously, like, free, you can just hop, like, even if you're not building a project, you can feel free to come and then get on, just listen to one of our professors talk, give a master class, and then if you do choose to compete, then there's a very, I would say, very generous prize pool we do have. This year we're projecting to have at least, I think, around $500 in prizes, cash prizes, and then we're going to have a bunch of, I think, keyboards, mouse, and headphones, that sort of thing for middle schoolers, and then, as always, we will always have an internship award for the first place team.
Are adults sort of checked at the door, and do you try to keep it a youth-only event?
Well, I think, to be honest, I don't know if adults would be, you know, we market towards, you know, teens and middle school students as well. And, I mean, adults are welcome to join, but last year we only hosted middle and high school students, but it's meant to be all inclusive. So.
That's a good answer to that. What? Yeah. Can you give me an example of what a master class might be? Who is teaching what?
I can give example of one. So last year I personally reached out to Dr. Tim Chun from University of Pittsburgh. He does biomedical engineering, and his work was using AI to, I think, analyze pancreas cells or something. I think it was that, and also CT scans. And he just gave an overview about how that process, how, like, it was like a 40-minute slideshow about how he does it, why he does it, you know, all the procedures. And he also had these, what are these things called? Like the thumb drives? Yeah, thumb drives. So he had these thumb drives he gave out to the students, and then people interested could plug them into their computer. They can run whatever he was doing, like the algorithm, on their own computer. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think the people who attended that, just like that thumb drive thing, it was sick. But yeah.
That sounds really interesting. How have either of you been involved in FIRST Robotics or Robotics, but you probably know about the program. Yeah. I think this is, there's similarities and differences. Mm. I mean, in FIRST Robotics, there is a goal you're given. There's a much longer time frame. However, this seems to be a little more open-ended and exploratory, and you also have the professional element. It's just the approach you're taking is really unique.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Now, the best way to get involved is probably to go to the website.
Yep. Website, Instagram. Well, we have a lot of ways to reach us.
But. Okay. And Shady Hacks is the handle at all places. I'm curious, if I may ask you a couple more questions. How do you feel about artificial intelligence, or augmented intelligence, as some might prefer to call it?
You can get started.
You know, I think in our hackathon, you know, of course, the artificial intelligence right now, that's like a huge, you know, when you hear that word, you're just like, wow, artificial intelligence. And in our hackathon, we try to, you know, I think our students would like to, you know, get the some master classes in AI exposure and stuff like that. So, I think especially in education and computer science education, like artificial intelligence and especially a generative large language models. You know, I know in my personal work, I use GitHub Copilot for all sorts of things, coding, and it's just so groundbreaking that you can, like, have any idea and have this, like, sort of personal assistant here to, you know, make whatever you want, and I think that's a really huge boost to our learning. But
yeah. So since he covered more of the education and technical side, I'm going to talk about how I feel more generally. I think I think AI literacy, what I call, is a big issue, and that's something both myself and Vivon are taking a part of as well. I started this initiative, I think, last year. I basically had conversation with our school head and also this one administrative person, and then we basically set out agenda for improving AI literacy at Shadyside Academy. And I had this idea because that's when the ChatGPT wave really came in, and all, you know, my friends or my classmates were really just kind of abusing it. They didn't really know how to use it. Like, it's either overly reliant on ChatGPT or too, like, scared to use it at all. So I think that was a big issue. And then now we're currently working to facilitate the AI education into the curriculum.
So it's almost like media literacy, knowing the source of news or so-called news that you're consuming. People perhaps need to know the limitations of using large language models. There have been times when I've needed a paragraph that I just, I'm a pretty decent writer, but I just have not had the time to write it. So I've been able to say, you know, I need a paragraph that explains the different types of microphones and the different applications you would use them for. And remarkably, I get a pretty good answer that I will then kind of correct and change. And but if that allows you to use more of your mind, it's helpful. Like you were mentioning the coding example. If you can get started with something you've conceived and have a prompt result in the code, that's got to be huge.
Yep, of course. Yeah. Since you brought up augmented reality, I just kind of wanted to note that really quick. This is, you know, very personal to me, but I honestly believe in a big future for AR. I think, for example, a big use case I see is myself. I moved from China to the U.S. When I was young, and then I always, you know, the only communication I can get with my family back home is through video calls, but that's always, you know, it's laggy, it's, you know, very inauthentic. So I think a big future for AR, a big application, is if you could visualize, you could have them on, it's like the Apple Vision Pro, you can visualize the person who you're calling, and they're just, like, sitting near a couch, and then, you know, and then the other person is also wearing the, you know, for example, the Vision Pro, and then they can see yourself, you know, sitting across from them. I think that that's an experience a lot of people would appreciate.
Very, very cool to think about it. I have two other things to ask you. First, you're juniors this year. I'm sure you're already thinking about what happens after you graduate. And I would not be an adult if I didn't ask you that question like every other adult in your life. Do you have a sense of what you might want to do?
Yeah, I think it's pretty visible based on, like, the things I'm involved in. I mean, but I'm looking to get into computer engineering, some sort of tech-related field. But.
And it, I mean, there are ways to combine that with policy and education, yeah, depending on what you want to do.
100%.
How about you, Thomas?
Yeah, I'm definitely, like you said, I'm definitely more on that. And I think as much as I love doing technical things, I think I would want to, in my, you know, career path, I want to do more tech combined with, you know, advocacy and that kind of thing. So I'm looking to do stuff like information systems or stuff like some schools have, like science, technology, and society. That's like something I'm also looking into.
Yeah, there's MIT and Carnegie Mellon both have really good programs. I'm sure there are others, too. I'm a product of Carnegie Mellon's program in that area. The other thing I wanted to ask is simply, do either of you have anything else you'd like to say that I didn't give you room to say? There might be people you want to acknowledge or things that you simply want to say about current conditions of computing or shady hacks in general. I just want to be sure that you get the last word.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should definitely give some acknowledgments. You know, a big thank you to our school, Shadyside Academy, for giving us that venue, and also the computer science department for helping us out a lot with the master classes, engagement, and all of that, those things. A big shout out to our sponsors as well.
Our sponsors are namely Enact Solar. That was one of our, they helped us give an internship to the first place team from last year. So that was very crucial. And then, you know, overall, just come to Shady Hacks, sign up.
Yeah. First place awards and internship. So at a company. But yeah.
I admire you both for what you're doing, Pavan Padar, Thomas Wang. And the website is joinsilicon.org/shadyhacks, and at Shady Hacks is how you'll find them on social media. I encourage you to register early and to check it out. Maybe share it with friends or people in your family. It's open to everybody, middle school, high school. Very welcoming group, and experience does not matter. It's all over the place. For everybody. And the date, April 5th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., but come for all of it, come for part of it, just engage. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you. All right, thank you so much.
With us. That's just really great, isn't it, to hear from Thomas and Vavon. Now, coming up, we're going to talk to some students from Junior Achievement. They have been honored with the 18 under 18 designation. And we'll be talking to them about their projects and their life. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, you're listening to the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings from SLB Radio Productions.
Play this song like it was written in 1928. Guitar part, but kind of song that could have been written any time in history. I'm just an old chunk of coal. I'm gonna be a diamond someday. That I'm going to grow and glow till I'm so blue, pure, perfect. Ooh, I'm going to put a smile on everybody's face. And I'm going to kneel and pray every day lest I should become vain along my lonesome way. I'm just no chunk of coal. I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna be the world's best friend. I'm gonna stop and shake everybody's doggone hand. I'm gonna polish up my old rough-edged self till I get rid of every single flaw. Diamond someday. I'm just an old chunk. day. I'm gonna grow and glow till I'm so blue, pure, perfect. I'm gonna put a smile on everybody's face.
Bookbinder, who you heard last week from his live performance at SLB. That was from a live performance at Fur Peace Station. Thank you for being along with us today. And I'm excited we have five more incredible teams that are about to join us. They're going to be introducing themselves to you shortly, and we'll be talking about their junior achievement of Western Pennsylvania 18 under 18 projects. Everybody that you meet was just honored at a ceremony last month for their work, and we'll talk a bit about that in just a moment.
The Saturday Light Brigade is made possible in part with support from the Allegheny Regional Asset District, putting Allegheny County sales tax dollars to work in regional libraries, parks, sports facilities, and arts and culture programs. Learn more at radworkshere.org.
Teens interested in podcasting, writing, music, journalism, or other forms of self-expression are invited to join us for a wide range of SLB Youth Media Center programs. Activities include workshops on writing and audio recording, as well as weekly open mics and open studio hours on Mondays through Thursdays from 3 to 6 p.m. and Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Activities are free to area teens. Visit ymc.slbradio.org for details.
Summer camp information is now available. We have camps for middle school and high school students. Go to ymc.slbradio.org. I have five folks in front of me from four different schools. They each have a unique project that they did as part of the Junior Achievement program that I just mentioned. And I'd like you each to please introduce yourself. If you have any shout-outs, feel free to pass those along. And then we'll talk about each of your projects. And I think what I might do, if you don't mind, is have you interview each other about your projects. Because I think it'll be fun and give you all more time on the radio. But first, let's have you introduce yourself. And we will start with Özge.
Hello, my name is Özge Ada Usman. I am 16 years old and I'm a 10th grade student at Shadyside Academy. I would like to shout out my friends, family, and my mentors.
Hello, my name is Ashley Jang and I'm 18 years old. I attend North Allegheny Senior High School and I'm currently a senior. I'd like to shout out for my family and friends as well.
Hi, I'm Layla Goa. I am 16 and a junior at Fox Chapel Area High School. I would like to shout out just anyone that made my project possible, whether that be those that supported me along the way financially or my family, friends, and the people at Fox Chapel that have really helped enable my success.
Hi, my name's Avni Kandelwal, and I'm a senior at North Allegheny Senior High School. I'm 17 years old, and I'd like to shout out my family, my incredible team, and anyone who's made it possible for us to cure with care.
Hi, my name is Zaire Williams. I go to Deer Lakes. I'm 18, and I'd like to shout out my mom, friends, and anybody that's helped me along the way.
Nice to meet all of you. And who would like to talk about their project first? We're going to go in order, it looks like. So, Uzge, we'll start. And I'll ask you just to sort of explain your project, and you all jump in if you have some questions after we hear a summary of what you chose, maybe why you chose it, and what it is.
Yeah, so my main project is this Child's Reach initiative. It's a learning tool that I'm developing for kids who have cortical visual impairment, and I'm doing this in partnership with the Children's Home of Pittsburgh. It's been really wonderful to work with them, and earlier in October, I was invited to present my work at the Innovations in CVI conference as well, locally. It was a really fun experience.
And what is you said cortical vision impairment?
Yes, cortical visual impairment is a condition that impacts how the brain processes vision. So while the kid's eyes may work just fine, it's a neurological condition that makes it difficult to interpret what they see.
Thanks. Any questions about the project that any of you would like to ask?
Okay, that's super cool. How'd you get started with this project?
I started with my robotics team. We do routine outreach visits locally, and we went to the Children's Home Hospital to kind of introduce the kids there to robotics and robotics concepts. When we went there, we soon realized that the children were having difficulty engaging with the stuff that we brought in. We brought in like little Lego robots and such. And from there, it turned into a problem-solving mission for us. And we started the initial Child's Reach initiative project. From there, this caught the attention of Dr. Christine Roman-Lancy, who is a very world-renowned CVI specialist. And as the lead on the project, I've been working with her ever since.
That's awesome. That's awesome, Ozge. When did you start your project?
I started it, I think like 3 years ago now. It's been a while.
That's incredible.
Nice. So did you have any like challenges you encountered while this process was going on?
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of learning curves to climb throughout the process. For example, like the interfaces themselves that I use to help the kids engage with the project, I had to learn how to program Arduino boards for it. And I also had to learn to program the website in JavaScript, and the boards were programmed in C++ as well. So like I had to learn two new coding languages, but it's really paid off.
That's awesome. How has this impacted your life?
It really helped me gain a lot of new experiences and opportunities. Like, for example, the CVI conference, I got to meet a lot of amazing people and get a ton of valuable feedback. And also the 18 under 18, this was a really big part of that. And I've been able to have so many incredible experiences and was able to network with a lot of people at the award ceremony and take the intern to VP class and learn how to, you know, continue what I'm doing in a meaningful way. So it's just really been amazing.
What a great project. Have you thought about what you might want to do after graduating? You're in 10th grade now, right?
I am, yeah. I don't know exactly what I want to do. I do want to continue my work with like the Child's Reach Initiative. It's really gratifying to be able to work with these kids. I think apart from that, I'm also a really avid writer, so I want to do more of that as well when I'm older.
Probably you can do whatever you'd like. I know you can, but I was curious because you're involved. There's so many different aspects of what you're doing, the technical aspect, the working with youth, also the medical field as well. So thank you. Let's go with Layla now and learn about
Ashley. I'm out of order. We knew that would happen. Ashley's project.
Yeah, sure. So I had two major passions that I had. First one being the energy inequality issue, which I found out about 11th grade. I was able to co-develop this one prototype called Solunar Panel with a friend, which basically is utilizing thermoelectric generators and have the basics at radiative cooling and the Seebeck effect. I was able to engineer this prototype and present at several different competitions and was also invited to the Global Impact Forum later on. So that was one of my passion. And the other one is teaching Ukrainian students through this organization called Engine. And this passion I started in 9th grade, and I was able to meet various Ukrainian students online and tutor English throughout high school.
Wow. Any questions that anybody would like to ask Ashley?
Yeah. How did you get started with all this?
Gotcha. So first of all, I was able to start the energy inequality and solar panel while I was volunteering at Grandview Elementary School. So I was able to tutor this elementary students and found out a lot about this energy disparity and how energy was not really equal even in this Pittsburgh region. So that's how I found my first passion. And also regarding the Ukrainian students and volunteering with that, I encountered a lot of news at that time about the Russo-Ukrainian war. And I realized how the news segments were all focused on statistics and facts rather than the Ukrainian stories itself. So I wanted to really hear their first-person stories.
When you talk about energy equality, I think is that the word you
use? Inequality, yes.
Inequality. Can you explain more what you mean by that?
Gotcha. So inequality is when these two different circumstances were like lay on a different basic. So we're our starting point is severely different, making one side more difficult to reach the same point. It's more like how the starting line is different when you're doing like a running match or something.
And so do you mean, is this based on people's individual economic situation?
Yes, correct.
We talk about environmental justice issues. It's similar to that. So you might be able to afford solar or other green technologies if you're of a certain means, but if you are not, those technologies aren't as available.
Yes.
Okay, I kind of thought that. I just wanted to be sure that I understood. Any other questions for Ashley?
What are the future steps for your Solunar panel?
Gotcha. So we currently have a provisional patent, and we're hoping to get an official patent if possible. The journey was really difficult to get the patenting as a high schooler. So definitely me and my friend are trying to look into this a little bit more, especially after high school. Yeah.
That's really cool. How'd you get started on the patent process and even developing this prototype?
Gotcha. So we first started this with the 600 step end through the government STEM competition. And through that, we were able to just basically stay after school, stay together and just try to build this prototype all together. And regarding the patent process, we were looking into a lot of different patent opportunities and realized that this provisional design patent is actually pretty simple to get as a high schooler too. It didn't really require that many legal jobs, like getting an attorney, which is a lot of things, like a lot of obstacle people may think. It is, so it was pretty simple. It was more like documentary work, and through that we were able to achieve this.
I just have a follow-up question. For those that may not know as much about the Solunar panel, can you just explain what that does, what that is, and what it helps with in that energy inequality disparity?
Gotcha. So Solunar panel is a solar and lunar panel combined together, which enables 24/7 electricity generation possible. A lot of people use a solar panel currently. However, I realized that Pittsburgh's inconsistent weather makes it really difficult to rely on solar panels solely. So we were able to combine this lunar panel using this thermoelectric generator, which enables to generate electricity with just a small little temperature difference. And through that, we use this night sky and the surrounding ambient air to kind of get electricity out of those temperature difference.
That's really cool.
That's incredible.
Thank you.
Have you thought about life after high school? You're in 11th grade right now.
I'm in 12th grade. 12th. Yes.
So you've definitely thought about life after high school.
True. So I am really into engineering and also just STEM itself. So I am really looking into developing prototypes and possibly kind of merging the social aspect and engineering aspect so that it can make a true impact to the world.
Terrific. Now we go to the aforementioned Layla back in order. Talk about your project, please.
Yeah, of course. So I was mainly nominated for 18 Under 18 after starting the nonprofit Cakes for Care, which is an organization that really aims to uplift people in our community through distributing baked goods and also selling them. Just baked goods are often seen as just a staple of life. So many people rely on them. And I think that providing that to people that may not be as accessible to baked goods, just those in shelters, those that may not be as fortunate, is really impactful to me. So far, we have delivered 30,000 baked goods to people. Sorry, 300,000 baked goods to people throughout the Pittsburgh area and the greater Pittsburgh area. We really love partnering with the Hearth Women's Shelter, the VA Hospital, the Children's Institute, and just any organization that has people that may be benefited from a little bit of uplifting and a little bit of human compassion.
Do you know the group called Beverly's Birthdays?
We do. We actually try to bake for them approximately once a month or once every 2 months. We try to provide those cupcakes for people that are being honored with their birthdays, because honestly, birthdays are such a big part of our lives.
I'm glad you know them, and Hearth and the VA are great organizations to work with too. Any questions for Layla from you folks?
Yeah, how has this impacted your school and how you look at things?
I think it's really made me feel just an immense overwhelm of gratitude, just knowing that so many people undergo so many obstacles, and it makes me feel really fulfilled to know that I could have a possible impact on just giving them a glimpse of hope in their lives. So I move throughout my day trying to remember that, trying to think about how I can help others. And I think it's really helped me in my community service ventures, which has been a big part of my life. I think also in school, it's helped me be a little bit more cautious about what I choose to spend time on, because it's obviously a big time commitment. So I think it helps me learn what's meaningful to me and what I want to be spending more of my life with.
That's super cool, Layla. What's your favorite experience with your organization?
My favorite experience is probably baking at the Family House of Pittsburgh. We usually bring 3 to 5 group members that are involved in Cakes for Care, the volunteers, to bake for those receiving services from the Family House and shelter, because obviously they've had long days at the hospital. I think sometimes just coming home and realizing that there's something on the table that's not just an immediate meal, it's just something that could be snacked on, but it's also going to taste good. And also just all of the memories made with all our volunteers through baking there, and all of the laughter that's shared, is just one of my favorite memories.
Yeah, this is truly awesome. How did you start this organization and journey?
So I started Cakes for Care after baking for the Women's Center and Shelter of Pittsburgh in 2023. I was working to bake with one of my friends, and I just felt such a sense of fulfillment after baking a bunch of cookies and realizing that it just gave me so much satisfaction, and I wanted to extend that satisfaction to as many volunteers as possible that may love baking. I really gained a love for baking over the pandemic, and I think I wanted to extend that and make baking more community gratifying. And I also just realized that since eating baked goods is such an instrumental part of our lives, so many people just do it without thinking. I think it may offer a sense of humanity to those receiving them at the shelter. It may like offer human support and just remind them that people are there for them. So that was my main motivation towards starting this project. And I talked to some of my mentors at school, especially Miss Gibson, who's one of my like biggest people to exchange ideas with, and we really started thinking about growing this into a bigger entity.
I'm curious just about a couple practical things. 300,000 baked goods, or is that, I heard you said,
yeah.
Over what period of time, roughly?
Over since 2023 spring to approximately now, so 2 years.
So that's about 100,000 per year, well, 150,000 per year. You must have a bunch of volunteers supporting.
We do.
You.
We have approximately 80 working with us right now, and we do, that 300,000 is over through bake sales and through just drop-offs. So we try to do about 1 to 2 drop-offs a week to different shelters. Each drop-off usually has about 100 baked goods. And it's also, we work with various bakeries because sometimes our volunteer power isn't enough.
Well, that's what I was thinking is, in addition to being heartfelt and doing an incredible thing and the act of baking, you've got a logistics challenge that is really something. I mean, in terms of getting the ingredients, getting people to bake in their own kitchens or help in terms of figuring out who gets what and when and where. So that's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, I think that we try to mainly overcome that barrier through donation money. We have been very fortunate in our support, and ingredients aren't as expensive as buying a finished baked good. So
yes.
I think as long as we make them, we've been relying on our initial donations, and it's still provided for us thus far. And I think that also just Oakmont Bakery's donations to us at their end of the day, and Crumble Cookies donates to us, and Sarah's Custom Sweets, and other local bakeries that just at certain days, we'll reach out to them, and sometimes they'll respond.
If a bakery is listening right now, which is actually pretty likely, how can they reach you for the project?
Yeah, absolutely. You can email me at
They could also email me if you'd
email
prefer.
Them, yeah.
Would that be, so you don't have to give your personal email address on the radio. So if you'd like to get involved, if you're a bakery, and these are mostly treats, not bread, so email me and I will make sure Layla gets it.
Yeah, that'll be so helpful, and it will honestly make such a difference in people's lives.
Quickly, do you know, you're in 11th grade now. Do you know what you want to do?
Yeah, I want to be a physician, actually. I just really love helping people, and I think that doing that humanitarian aspect and helping people with their physical conditions, as well as helping to provide that compassion and help with mental things that could arise as a result of those, is just really impactful to me. I do want to be a physical medicine and rehab doctor, just because I know that focuses on the more human side of things. It helps people have that individualistic approach to patient care and patient future plans, and I think that that's really impactful to me.
Thank you. Let's go to Avni now and learn about your project.
Hey, everyone. My name's Avni, and I founded Curing with Care. After my cousin passed away from synovial sarcoma, I felt a strong need to raise awareness specifically about cancer among young adults. So a lot of what we do is service projects, community events, and fundraising. To this date, we've raised $30,000 for youth cancer awareness by partnering with different organizations. We have clubs set up in different schools. So initially when I started, I joined the cancer club at my school and realized how much potential it had to be scaled. So as of today, we have over 40 clubs in different regions all over the world with 500 active volunteers.
What does a cancer club do?
So what we do, we attend a lot of community events, whether they be 5Ks or relays. Making Strides is a big one we attend in Pittsburgh each year. And then we also make little crafts and goodies for cancer patients. We do little care bags, we do care bears, and things like that to, support those that are currently undergoing treatment, and even survivors after they've undergone treatment, yeah.
Any questions?
I know all the work you've done has been pretty extensive and fairly resulting in great numbers and great impact on those cancer patients. Can you share a little bit more about what you've achieved thus far?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, we've raised over $30,000 for cancer patients. We've touched hundreds of thousands of lives all across the globe. And having a center in different regions, we've been able to go out to hospitals, go out to different organizations. We partner a lot with American Cancer Society, the Club Hope Foundation, Lawrence Run, and other ones. And by in doing so, we can directly connect with patients and also spread awareness online. A big part of what CARE does is through our social media platforms where we raise awareness amongst young adults. Since social media is so common for our generation to use, we do a lot with like Instagram, TikTok. We post fun little videos. You guys can follow us at Curing with Care.
Sayer, did you have a question as well?
How has this like impacted and constructed your life?
I think it was definitely all of the experiences I've had and the people I've met. CARE has given me the invaluable opportunity to connect with, you know, hundreds of patients and also hundreds of individuals that are in the healthcare field, from those who like support and are caregivers to even those who are like doctors and professionals. I've had the opportunity to meet so many incredible people and learn from, you know, their journeys. And I think that's definitely helped form what Curing with CARE is today.
How are you able to go through the process of having this global presence?
I'm so incredibly grateful for my team. Together, we've been able to like reach out to so many people across so many countries. And I think a big part, again, is our social media platform where a lot of people contact us even. So if you're interested in starting a chapter, or, you know, starting a club at your school, you can definitely reach out to us.
Can you tell me the name of your cousin?
Yeah, his name was Sarthak. He passed away from synovial sarcoma, and I started it to honor him.
And how old was he?
He was young. He was 25 when he passed.
What you're doing is wonderful.
Thank you.
And thank you. Do you know what you want to do after high school?
Yeah, I want to go into the medical field. I want to, you know, continue to help people in the way I've been doing. So I'm interested in oncology and neurology and things like that. So eventually I do want to become a doctor and I do want to teach. I want to become a professor. A big part of my life has been mentoring, and I'm incredibly grateful to have incredible mentors. And I want to carry that forward by, you know, going and becoming a professor at a university and teaching.
We're going to go to Sayer in just a moment. I need to say that you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town Phoenix, WSHJ Grove City, WCUCD FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, WKYW LP Kaiser, West Virginia, Mountain Streams Radio.org, Tube City Online at WMCK.FM McKeesport, and SLB Radio.org. Sayer, I can't wait to hear about your project.
Yes, my name is Sayer. My program is I co-founded Team Upstanders with my school counselor. We did this because there was a lot of problems going on in the middle school, and we needed something to show people that what they're doing is not okay. So we started a anti-bullying program, and what we did was our first assembly my seventh grade year, we had actor Trevor Donovan come help us, and we basically had him talk about what's right and what's wrong. We also had a bunch of volunteers called Upstanders, and you make an oath to join. And we did a skit with each other, a bullying skit, and it was pretty fun. And it got the audience engaged to see like what is wrong to do and what is right. We also had to involve the audience so they understand it. So we did a couple activities and showed them why we did this. It's been going on now, and they actually do it every year, have assembly, and then when the actor can come down, he does. In high school right now, I am involved in Stand Together, Hope Squad, Student Council. Yeah.
And you were there at the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's Terrific. Any questions of Sayer?
Yeah, I have a question. Just what motivated you to get involved with Team Ups, to start Team Upstanders and just continue this project?
So when I was in sixth grade, I joined student council and I attended leadership conferences, and seeing what they did, seeing how the school changed just from them putting on a conference was amazing. And I figured we need to do